Now we're holding on in Nedarim, page Nun Dalet, Ois Zayin. The last thing we learned about was that a person makes a neder, then he's called a Rosha, and we quoted a pasuk in that connection, Shom Rishoyim Chod L'Ruiges, that they are after a person passes away and in the grave, there the Rishoyim cease their Ruiges, their anger. The word Ruiges actually has in Tanakh, sometimes the word roigas or rogas, whatever that shodash means, to tremble, but it also means anger. So here the Gemara is understanding it in that sense that the Rishoyim are angry, and as we learned yesterday, Marsha points out that many times, a person in fact will make a neder out of anger. For example, the Nedarim that it talks about in a considerable part of our Masechta.
Quiet.
The Nedarim that it talks about in a considerable part of our Masechta, where a person makes a neder that another person can't have hana from him, or that he won't have hana from the other person, is often done out of anger at the other person. So we're saying there was a direct connection between Nedarim and anger. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion about the problems with anger. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yochanan or Yonason, Kol Adam Shekoyis. Person gets angry, kol minei puronius shel gehenim shelten by, all kinds of punishments of gehenim end up dominating him. Now, there's two major explanations of that. One is that we mean, in other words, beruchnius, because when he gets angry, it causes him to be koifer be'ikr. The Gemara, the Ran here refers to a Gemara in Shabbos that says a person gets angry and he tears things or breaks things or whatever, and his anger is considered like worshipping Avodah Zarah. So in the same sense, over here we're saying therefore that he's doing a serious avera, and therefore he deserves Gehenna. So how it is that anger has to do with koifer be'ikr? So there's a number of different explanations, but we know in particular there's one. The Alter Rebbe explains in Igeres HaKodesh Chof Hei that if a person has something untoward happening to him and he's getting angry about it, means that he doesn't really believe that Hashem is causing it to happen. So therefore it's considered kilo oivid avodas kachavim. Anyway, so that's one major explanation. The other explanation the Rosh brings is it means it's pashut hard on his body as well. So it means, in other words, he feels Gehenim during his lifetime on his own body. Forget about what happens after 120. We're talking about right now. That even right now his body feels the effects as though it's going through all types of Gehenim. The Rosh also adds that when he's angry, it's more likely to lead him to Averis. So again, the Ran was saying the point that anger itself is considered like Koifa Be'ikr, but now the Rosh is also adding it can bring him to doing Averis, which makes him more susceptible to Gehenim as well.
Well, when you're angry, it causes the Shekhinah to leave you.
Hey, there's a lot of things, yeah, the Gemara mentions in different places, so yeah. But Marsha also adds the point, after all, Gehenim is always talked about in terms of fire, and anger is also Yesoida Esh, we have the Alter Rebbe mentions at the end of the first Perek of Tanya. So therefore, in fact, that's another reason, another name for anger in Tanakh is Chema, which literally means heat. So therefore, it all ties together then, that because of the anger, therefore there's the fire of Gehenim.
Upset.
Yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, v'hosir kas milibecha, take away anger from your heart, v'haver ra mibsarecha, and you'll remove evil from your flesh. And the pasuk finishes off, ki ayaldus v'ashachrus hovel, childishness and youth is meaningless, meaning, in other words, sometimes, especially a person is younger, they're more easily provoked about things, so you realize that the little things that happen when a person is younger are not so important to get angry about. So what does ra mean? In ra, el gehenim, the word ra in this context means gehenim, shenema, as you have a posit. Kol po'al Hashem lama'anehu. Hashem has made everything for his purposes. V'gam rosha, the yom ra, and also the rosha for the day of evil. Which in the simple sense means, in other words, that Hashem has created even the fact that now Hashem doesn't create Rishoyim in the sense Hashem doesn't tell them to be Rishoyim, but Hashem tzaddik v'rosha like Amar. But it means, in other words, that Hashem has created that there is a Gehenim, and that's where the Rishoyim gets what's coming to them, and that shows Hashem's greatness. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, puts a completely different spin on that pasuk v'gam rosha l'yom ra in Tanya in Perek Chof Zayin. The Alter Rebbe talks about that it means that here you have a rosha, but then he does tshuva and he accomplishes his hapcha and his skafia, and that in that way v'gam rosha, the Eibishter created him with the tendency, not with the tendency, because tzaddik v'rosha lo'kama, with the ability to be a rosha l'yom ra, in order that he should take the ra and transform it into a yom. But in the more simple sense, we're saying over here that also the fact that the Eibishter created, that there is a punishment for the Rishoyim itself is an expression of Hashem's greatness. Anyway, we see that the word Ra means Gehenim, because that's what it means. The Rasha ends up in the day of evil, meaning Gehenim, and therefore we see that when the Pasuk says, remove Kas from yourself, and there you'll remove Ra from yourself, so it means that he'll remove Gehenim from himself, and the flip side, if he has Kas, then he has Gehenim. V'loy oid, not only that, continues Rav Shmuel Menachmeni, not only that, a person who gets habitually angry is going to end up suffering from hemorrhoids. That's a shultes boy. They're going to dominate him. In other words, like he's going to have them, and it's going to be taking up all of his thoughts of what to do about them. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'nosan Hashem, talking about in the Teuchecha, talking about how it's going to be in Golos. V'nosan Hashem l'cha shom lev ragos. There in Golos, Hashem will give you a heart of ragos. So again, one meaning of ragos can mean trembling. In other words, it can mean that in Golos, we live like almost like we live one day at a time, and then unfortunately, many times we have to be fearful about how things are going to be the next day. But here, the Gemara again is taking the word ragos in the sense of anger, of roiges. So because there's going to be lev ragos, the result is v'chil yonei na'im, therefore there's going to be a wasting away of eyes, the davin nafesh, and a disappointment of the soul. So, what kind of physical problem has that effect, that a person is looking forward? Rashi explains on various times when the Pasuk uses the word kilyan einayim, it means like a person is looking forward with his eyes to something better, and it doesn't happen, and therefore like his eyes metaphorically waste away, expecting something good to happen, and it doesn't happen. So what is machala seinayim, madivas hanefesh? What is it that has such an effect on a person's eyes and on a person's soul? That refers to hemorrhoids, where he's thinking, what can I do to get relief from it? And nothing seems to be helping, and he just said, and it's bothering him all the time. So we're saying, in other words, that because a person has lev ragos, therefore the result is he ends up having tachtonius sholtus boy. The one leads to the other. The lev ragos leads to kilyan einayim v'davein nafesh, which refers to this.
Rashi brings when you have an expectation and you don't see it.
That's what I'm saying. Rashi explains kilyan einayim means a person is expecting something. Yeah, that's what I was just saying. So there is that as well. An interesting vote from the Stipler I saw. He says that what do you mean veloy oid? Gehenim isn't bad enough, and that we're saying also tachtonius. And the answer is that yes, psychologically, you know, you tell a person this and this is going to cause Gehenim. Okay, it'll cause Gehenim. You know, I don't have no real conception of what Gehenim is. You tell them something down to earth like that about tachtonius, then that may make him take notice. Speaking of this pasuk of lev ragos in Golos, so the Gemara brings a story. Ula b'miske la'arad Yisrael, when Ula was going up to Eretz Yisrael, as we learned at the end of Ksubas, Ula used to regularly travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. We find all over Shas, he would bring statements from the Chachamim in Bavel to those in Eretz Yisrael, and vice versa. So he was a very important link between the yeshivas and the different places. But in any case, one time when he was going up to Eretz Yisrael, Islavon Bahadei Train Bnei Chozoi, two Jews from Bei Chozoi came and joined up with him to travel together. We've talked about Bei Chozoi before. It's a place nowadays it's in Iran, and so these two Jews were also on their way to Eretz Yisrael from having passed through Bavel, and the three of them are going together. At some point during the trip, one of them got in such a fight with the other one, kom chad shachte l'chavre. One of them got up and shechted the other one. And here we don't mean, by the way, like you have kom rabba shachte l'rabzera, where we have the famous sicha that it doesn't mean he literally shechted him. Here, apparently from the story, the one guy literally shechted the other. Then the one who had just killed the other one turns to Ula and says, "Lav yoi avdi, didn't I do good?" Like he's looking for Ula's approval of what he just did. And Ula was afraid to speak up against him. The guy's holding a knife over there. Who knows? He might be next. Ula says, "Ein, yes, uprale beis hashchita. In fact, uncover the beis hashchita." There's actually different understandings among the so the Ran says shiyomus beheder, that he should die sooner. In other words, the guy is already on the verge of death. So Ula is saying, so uncover, open up the wound of the shchita, so he'll die faster. There are some mafoshim who learn that maybe the guy was already dead, but in any case, He also Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan, when Ullah came to Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, Amalei, he asks, did I do right over there by saying that to the guy? Dilma chas v'sholem chazkis yidei over avera. Maybe I've chas v'sholem strengthened the hands of somebody who does an avera. He just did an avera, killing a fellow yid, and I'm telling him, in effect, good for you. You did the right thing. And that's a problem. The Gemara mentions in some places there's a serious avera called chanufa, where a person says to a rosha or someone who's doing something wrong, you're doing good. So Ullah is concerned that he was over on that. Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, no, in this case it wasn't a problem. Nafshecha hitzalti, you did it to save your own life, because otherwise he might have killed you. Now, so Tosfos actually discusses, the Gemara in Sota talks about this whole matter of Chanufa and the story over there of Agrippas HaMelech, where he's crying when he's reading during Anhaka, when he's reading Parashas HaMelech, and he starts crying, realizing that he's not really suitable to be a Jewish king, and they all call out to him, Achinu Ata, and the Gemara has very harsh things to say about that they were guilty of Chanufa. So Tosfos points out over there, we see from all Gemara that when a person's life is in danger, it's different, and then he's more allowed to do that. As in this case, where Ullah had reason to be afraid that the guy might kill him as well, as opposed to over there by Agrippas. If they hadn't told him that, then they wouldn't have been in any danger. We see from that Gemara and from other Gemaras that Agrippas was taka melech kosher, and he wouldn't have taken it out on them for not agreeing with him. So Mishanim Epnei HaShalom is something different. That's to alter the truth for the sake of Shalom. Here we're talking about blatantly telling a person who had just done an Aveira, you did right. Now, it's actually not so simple. Rabbeinu Yonah discusses this whole matter of Chanufa in his Sefer Shaarei Teshuva, and he discusses that it's not so simple to say that there are exceptions for that it is, after all, a very serious bad midah. So one difference would be over here, because I think one distinction that's also made is here there's really there not only did Ullah need to save his life, but also it's already Lacha Maisa. It's if he could have prevented him in some way from doing it, then it would be a serious aveda for him to tell him go ahead and do it. But because it's already a done deal, then therefore it's less serious.
Because he killed the army.
That's one point. In other words, it was already done. There is, by the way, there is a very interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe in this connection, also bringing up this matter of Chanufa and saying to a Rosha, you're doing well. Rav Moshe was presented with a case of a Yid who unfortunately was intermarried, Rachman Lotzlan, and the question was, can they give him an aliyah in his shul or otherwise give him kibbudim? And Rav Moshe deals with this whole matter of Chanufa and so all the ins and outs of it. And one thing he points out, it's different where the Chanufa is regarding the actual thing itself. If you were to tell him, you're doing fine by being married to that goita, that would be a problem of Chanufa. But when you're giving him a side kibbud that has nothing directly to do with that, then it's not necessarily such an issue.
That's the exact type of Chanufa.
Chanufa is flattery. It is telling the person, you're doing good. Anyway, the Gemara continues.
At that point, or
what?
They gave him an aliyah or other?
No. In this case, we're not talking about an aliyah, but I'm talking about in the case that was brought to the Moshe, which is printed in Igros Moshe. You have a case over there where a Yid was married to a goita, and they wanted to offer him an aliyah in shul, and the question is whether they can do that. Anyway, the Gemara continues, Katoma Rabbi Yochanan. Now Rabbi Yochanan was wondering, how is such a thing possible anyway, that one Yid should, not just that one Yid should get so violently angry at another, but he thought this took place already in Eretz Yisrael. And the pasuk says, "V'nosan Hashem l'cha sham leiv ragos." The pasuk says that Hashem will give you there in galus an angry heart, meaning b'bavel chsiv. So evidently, that pasuk is talking about only in Bavel. So how could it be they already came to Eretz Yisrael, and should be such a thing that one person gets so violently angry at the other as to kill him? And we find Iyun Yaakov points out Rabbi Yochanan was a native of Eretz Yisrael, and he was very much in love with Eretz Yisrael. He always spoke in praise of it. We had some of it at the end of Ksubas, so therefore he's shocked that such a thing could happen in his beloved Eretz Yisrael. Omalahu Ula, so Ula answers them, Ahi Chaitel, I have overlon Yardina. At that point, we hadn't crossed the Yardin yet. We were still in Evra Yardin. Now, Evra Yardin, to some extent, is considered part of Eretz Yisrael, but it's not fully, it doesn't have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. In particular, Rashi says you can't bring the Oimer, you can't bring the Korban Oimer from barley that grows there, which is not so simple, by the way, this that Rashi is saying, that the Ran mentions that you can't bring the Korban Oimer from there is not so simple. Rabbi Akiva Eger points out in Gilui Nashas, there are other places from which it seems that you can. Eitz Yosef actually refers to something that he explains on Medrash Tanchuma, where he also says, based on this Ran and based on some other proofs from Midrashim, that maybe indeed you can't. Be that as it may, Evra Yavdin doesn't have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore no wonder it could happen, that such a terrible thing could happen over there. In fact, we find the Gemara tells us in Makkos that the Gemara says the Gilad Nefishi Roitzchim, and in Gilad, which is Eivor HaYavdin, there were more commonly Roitzchim than there were in Eretz Knan and Eretz Yisrael proper, which is why they needed three main Orei Miklat for 2.5 Shvatim, and then on the other side of the Yavdin they also had only three main Orei Miklat where you had 9.5 Shvatim over there. Why? Because there's a lot more Roitzchim per capita in Eivor HaYavdin. So it fits with this point that there's more that people get more easily angered and provoked and violent there than in Eretz Yisrael properly. Marsha brings in this connection a pasuk. You have a pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim where Moshe is talking, I know what's going to happen when you come into Eretz Yisrael. You're not going to be behaving the way you're supposed to. So he uses the expression, Hashem actually says, Ki yadaiti es Yitzrael, I know the Yetzahara, Ashahu oisayim, that they're doing now, but terem avienu ala oretz, before I'm bringing them to the land. Meaning, in other words, Hashem is saying, look, I see how they were acting during the 40 years in the Midbar. I haven't been punished them that severely for it because they're not in Eretz Yisrael yet. They don't have that special boost from the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. But now when they come into Eretz Yisrael, if they wind up doing the same kind of thing, they're going to be in much greater trouble because the Schus of Eretz Yisrael ought to be taming their Yetzirah, as Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. So the Gemara continues on this topic of Kas, Omer Rava or Rabba Bar Ravuna, Kol Odom HaKoyes, a person gets angry, Afilu Shechina Ein Chashuva Kenegdoi. He considers even the Shechina to be unimportant to him. Again, the idea being that he thinks that things have to be his way and that the Eibishter is not running the world, so it shows that he doesn't consider even the Shechina to be an important factor. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Rosha kigoyva apoy, the Rosha in the height of his anger, when he gets very angry, bal yidrush, he does not seek out Hashem, ein elokim kol mezimosav, and all of his thoughts are that there's no Hashem or that Hashem is unimportant to him, that the Shechina is unimportant to him. And again, related to this idea, as the Alter Rebbe explains it in Tanya, because then if he realized the Eibishter is running things, then he wouldn't get angry at the other person. He would be the other person deserves his punishment for being the shliach to do the thing, but he wouldn't get angry, as we find by David, with Shimi cursing him, for example, where he says, let him go ahead and curse. Hashem is giving him the koyach to do that. Rabbi Yumi Midifti says, also, a person gets angry, it causes him to forget his learning. Or Moisif Tipshus, and it causes him to become more foolish. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ki chaas b'cheik silim yonuach. The pasuk says, anger rests in the bosom, in the lap of fools. So we see that a person who gets angry is a foolish person. Uchtiv, and we find another pasuk, Uchsil yifreis ivelas. The fool spreads out his foolishness. Uchsil and evil are various kinds in throughout Sefer Mishle. You have different words for a foolish person because there's different kinds of fools. There's a person who doesn't know at all. There's a person who deliberately goes against the Torah. So there's different words for them. But in any case, we see that he spreads it out and then, meaning in other words, it becomes greater. So he loses his Torah. And he becomes more foolish. So the idea being, in other words, that why is it describing it that the anger is b'cheikoi in his lap, literally? So Marashah says, because in other words, like this, you should have, even a person gets angry, at least you should be noyach le'rotzis. It's easy for him to be calmed down and appeased. So when he's not, then it's like it's sitting in his lap for a long time. And then the result is, you know, the result is therefore that his chaverim and his tamidim stay away from him. They don't learn with him as much, and therefore, so he ends up losing his Torah in that way. As the Gemara mentions in different places, a person learns Torah by himself, then he ends up forgetting, and then he ends up forgetting his learning. As opposed to when he has his chaverim and his tamidim with him, then we know he learns from his chaverim and most of all from his tamidim. So there's a chassidish story on this in Sefer in Sipurei Chassidim with some Rebbe, I don't remember which one, where someone did something really really off the charts bad in his house. So he tells his mishares go. I think what it was is there was a din Torah and somebody was clearly blatantly lying. So the tzaddik says to them, I think it was Reb Zusha Anapolder, but I don't remember. Anyway, he says, I have this box up on this top shelf over here, and that box contains my anger. If I have to open it up, then you're going to be in big trouble. Better you should straighten up over here. So afterwards, an explanation was given. You see from this pasuk, the ksilim, the fools have their anger in their lap, ready to use at a moment's notice. A tzaddik keeps it in a box. the Gemara continues. Not only that, a person who gets angry like that, you know for a fact that his averis are greater in number than his schuyas, and greater in number and quantity or whatever. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ish af yigodem modo, you know, an angry person provokes quarrels, or val chema, and a person who has a lot of anger, rav posha, is full of averis. So we see therefore that he's full of averis, which even outweigh his mitzvahs. Speaking of another thing involving kas, though, here's sort of a positive side of it. Omer of Acha or Ada Bar Chanina il mole lechotir Yisrael. If the Jewish people had not sinned with the various things in the Midbar and afterwards in Eretz Yisrael, lo nitan lahem el chamisha chumshei Torah v'sefer Yeshua bilvad. All we would have gotten is the five chumashim and sefer Yeshua. All the rest of the books of Tanakh deal with the various failings of the Jewish people. Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim, all of them focus a lot on the things that went wrong and how they needed to be corrected. So if it hadn't been for that, if they hadn't done those averis, we would only need, so we would not have needed those other svarim, we would only need the five chumashim, because that's the Torah, and Sefer Yoshua. What's so special about Sefer Yoshua? Mepnesha Erka Shal Eretz Yisrael. Because Sefer Yoshua gives the list of it gives the borders of the Shvatim and the cities within each Shevet. That's important information that we need to know. So that's not because of the Jewish people's Averis. In fact, when you get down to it, if you look in Sefer Yoshua, you can find it's basically the sequel, it's the completion of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. You find throughout Chumash, the Eibishter already from Sefer Bereishis, the Eibishter is promising to the others that the Jewish people are going to have Eretz Yisrael afterwards in Sefer Shmois and on, and then you have Sefer Yoshua is where it actually all happens. In fact, there's the Sukkim over there and in Sefer Yoshua that stressed that point. The Ebishter gave the land to the Jewish people as he had commanded. L'nofel davar echad, not one thing of the good things the Ebishter promised failed to come true. So Yoshua is really like the final chapter of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. But anyway, we're saying that because the Jewish people sin. And then therefore we wound up having to have more Sfarim of Tanakh. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki berov chokhma rov kaas, together with great chokhma comes great anger. So we see in the great chokhma that we have from the Sfarim of the Nevi'im, it shows a lot of anger because it shows all the times that the Jewish people angered Hashem. The Yosef Das, Yosef Machlev, and the pasuk continues, the increase of knowledge causes an increase of pain. So we see, in other words, because there was pain and because there was anger that the Jewish people angered Hashem, therefore we have to have all these extra sforim which spell out more of the chokhmah of Torah. The idea being, in other words, if it hadn't been for that, we would have known everything that we have. There's a lot of important things that we learn from the sforim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, but the point is, all of those we would have been able to learn from Chamisha Chumshei Torah itself. The Gemara has an expression in Masechta Tainis when it says, Lekha midi delo de mizi baraisa, there's nothing that there's no hint of in the Torah. It means within Chamisha Chumshei Torah, everything that's in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, let alone everything else, is hinted at someplace in Torah Shebechsav. So therefore, had we been Zoicha, we would have needed only that. Like this, in other words, there is the positive side of it, though, similar to what it says about the luchos, that with the first luchos, there was only Torah Shebichsav, and then with the second luchos, also the Eibishter tells Moshe, there's also going to be with it halacha and agoda and medrash and so forth, also bringing the same pasuk, the Yosef Das, Yosef Machlev. So you have this idea that there was, it came about in a negative way, but as a result of it, we have kiflayim l'toshiyah, much more doubled and redoubled degrees of chokhmah of Torah.
That's why Simcha Shkina is there.
So that's what?
Opposite, Simcha, that's why Shekhinah is there when a person is happy. So he gets the Torah.
Yeah, okay, but here we're talking about as a result of the Jewish people angering Hashem, therefore we got in writing more Sforim of Torah that otherwise would have not needed to be written.
Meaning, So
in other words, yeah, okay, so a person should be a simcha, okay, fine. I mean, the Rif brings up the point. I mean, wait a second, what about shirashirim? What about tilim? You're telling me we wouldn't have had those svarim? And the answer, Eitz Yosef says, is basically yes, if we hadn't been, for what we're saying, if they hadn't been choter, we wouldn't have needed those svarim written as it is. We would have been able to understand all the deep concepts and all the beautiful things of shirashirim and all the tfilis of tilim. We would have been able to understand and be able to compose them ourselves rather than have to just refer to the written text that David and Shlomo wrote. The Gemara deals with the Gemara now goes back to, after having digressed to talk about the problem with making nedarim and how it sometimes is a result of anger. So now the Gemara gets back to the topic of hataras nedarim, the grounds for hataras nedarim. So one thing is the Gemara mentions a case where one of the chachamim was trying, where he had a neder, they were trying to be matir it, and he couldn't, and the chachamim couldn't find any way to be matir it. Every grounds that they mentioned to be matir it is he would say that's not really valid grounds. I did have that point in mind when I made the neder, and therefore it's not a valid Pesach. So in the course of that discussion, the Gemara quotes the following Mishnah from Pirkei Avos, Rebbe Omer, Ezehi derech yishara sheyover loy ha'adam, what's the straight way that a person should choose for himself? Kol shi tiferes loy seha, where it's a glory for him, where he's acting in the right way for himself, for tiferes loy min ha'adam, and it's also glory by other people, meaning in other words that other people also realize that it's the right thing to do, as opposed to, in other words, the Rosh makes a point. If it's just tiferes lo iseha, then after all, a person is always good at rationalizing what he does, that what he does is right, and therefore we don't know that it's really the right thing. When you see that tiferes lo min ha'adam, that other people appreciate it as well, then you know it's the right thing. The point is, this was in the middle of a story over there where the Gemara says that they were telling the schacham who had made the neder, you know what, to consider that the right way to do things is not to make it difficult for the chachamim, but rather to do things in a way that to begin with that the chachamim will approve of, and therefore that itself can be a valid grounds to be matir your neder, the fact that the other chachamim disapprove of you having made it in the first place. Okay. Another example, the Gemara says, Reb Shimon b'Rebbe havelei nidra l'mishra. Reb Shimon b'Rebbe one time had a neder that he needed to, that he had, that, that he needed hataras nedarim for. Also a kamayu de rabbanon, so he comes to the chachamim to be matir neder. Amri le nadarta adaita dehochi, so they ask him again to create a Pesach. Did, when you made the neder, did you have this particular possible side effect in mind? Omar Ain, he says, yes, I did have in mind that it would be effective even in such and such circumstances. Adaiti Dahochi Ain, Kama Zimnin, they kept on going like this, kept on trying to find various scenarios where the neder would create a hardship. And each time he's saying, I had this in mind when I made the neder. And as we learned yesterday, that means, in other words, so he doesn't have a valid Pesach. V'havum mitstari rabbanan mishimsha l'tula or mitula l'shimsha. The chachamim were being troubled. They were going from the sun to the shade, and from the shade to the sun. So what does that mean? The Ran brings it means like this, that they were so distressed over the point that they couldn't find a valid Pesach for the neder, that they were going back and forth from one place to another. They couldn't fit. They were very distressed over the point that they couldn't find a Pesach for the neder. Marsha explains differently. Actually, what it means is like this. He says that in the times of the Gemara, in those countries, and maybe even in later times, sometimes they would build buildings where half the building would have a roof and half would not. That way, you have like part of it is a roofed building for bad weather, and part of it is like a gazebo where you can be sitting outdoors. So when it's not so hot, you would be sitting in the unroofed area. When it gets hot and then the sun is beating down, then you'd move to the roofed area. So here, what it means is they were spending hours and hours on this, trying to find a Pesach for the Shimon Berebi's neder. So they're going back and forth. They start out in the unroofed part. Then it gets too hot, so they move to the roof part. Then later on, it's cooler, so they move back to the unroofed part, and they're going back and forth like that. So in other words, they were taking hours and hours over it. There's a part of it here in parentheses, the Lishna Achrina, but that's it. It doesn't belong here, actually. It belongs a few lines later, so we'll skip it for the moment. Eventually, Omer le Botnis breda Abishol ben Botnis. Eventually, Botnis, the son of Abishol, the grandson, the son of Abishol ben Botnis. Abishol ben Botnis lived at the time of the Churban, so now his son Botnis is living a generation later in the times of Rebbe and his son. Barbre, I think, is actually it's supposed to be his grandson because otherwise it's far too long after the Churban. But anyway, he asks Reb Shimon, "Mi nadret adaita de mitzari rabbanon mitulu l'shimsha or mishimsha l'tula? Did you take into consideration that when it comes to be matir the neder, the chachamim are going to be in such distress or taking so much time to be matir your neder?" Amalei, Amaloi, so Reb Shimon Rebbe says, "No, that particular consequence of it, I didn't think of." V'shoyua, so they were able to use that as a grounds to be matir the neder. Every other possible consequence of it he had thought of, but not this one. And that was a valid Pesach. Similarly, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi havelei nidra l'mishra. In a similar vein, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi one time had a neder that he needed a toras nedarim for. So he comes to the Chachamim. And again, they start asking him, when you made the neder, did he have this consequence in mind? He says, yes. And this kept on going many times. Here is where the parenthetical part goes in before that they kept on asking him this many times, whether he meant this and this in mind. And again, like in the story of Reb Shimon Berebi, they were going back and forth between the sun and the shade, either out of tsar, as the Ran said, or because time was passing and the sun was moving, as Marsha says. Either way, eventually, a certain laundryman saw that the Chachamim are being in great tsar over this, that they're going back and forth like this, and they're trying every possible way to find a Pesach, and they're not able to find one. So this laundryman came over and hit Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi with the colander or the sprinkler that he used for his laundry. The way it did, when you the same way nowadays, for example, you're going to iron clothing, you put water inside the iron and then it sprinkles it on the clothing, and that way you can iron them nicely. In those days, they would use a similar kind of thing called uchla de katsri for that purpose, which was basically a keli with holes in it to sprinkle water on the clothes, so then they could press them and fold them properly. So he had that with him, so he used that to hit Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yosi over the head with. Omar, so Rabbi Shmuel says, "Adaiti d'mochol di katsri le'nadri." You know what? I never made the neder thinking that this laundryman is going to hit me over the head with his colander. V'shari l'nafshei, so he was able now to find a Pesach for himself. So here the Chachamim had spent all this time trying to find a Pesach, and now he found a Pesach. Now when it says shari l'nafshei, it doesn't mean he was able to be matir his own neder. He still needs to go to somebody else. But it means now that he had a Pesach, he's able to tell the Chachamim, oh, we have a Pesach, now you can be matir my neder on the basis of this Pesach.
Hit it with an iron.
Not an iron, but a colander or whatever. So there's two possibilities. Either this guy might have been a chutzpen yak who was going to act like that towards the Chachamim. There's an interesting explanation. Now the Gemara. So what it is actually the Gemara points out. Now you have a problem like this with this story. There's a halacha ein poskin benoilad. That when it comes to being matir neder, you can't use noilad. You can't use something that's completely out of left field. Something that could not have been at all reasonably expected at the time the neder was made. An example of it, the Gemara gives in Masechta Nazir, is there were people who had made a neder of Nazirus, and then the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. So Nochem Amadi held that you can be matir neder on that basis. The Chum disagreed because the destruction of the Beis Mikdash would be an example of noilad. Anyway, so over here, isn't it noilad that the guy comes all of a sudden and hits him over the head with this? So the Gemara explains that it's actually something fairly common, which the Mephoshim have two explanations of. One is it's fairly common that there are chutzpen yakas like that who attack the Chachamim, and the other is, interestingly, the opposite, that the it's common enough that you have people who are looking out for the covert of the Chachamim, and here he's causing the Chachamim so much tsar that they're going back and forth from the sun to the shade, so like he figures you got to hit him over the head to make him stop being with tsar, the Chachamim, like that. So one way or the other, it's not considered noilad, and therefore it's a valid Pesach. A couple of dafim later, the Gemara deals with the. A couple of dafim later, the Gemara starts dealing with the following matter. A person makes a neder. He has in mind, he says something exaggerated, for example, and afterwards he explained that he meant it as an exaggeration and he didn't really sincerely mean it. So the Gemara discusses the difference between the Dorim and Shavuos in that regard. So one point is when a person is taking, that a person is making a shvua, it has to be that he can't make the shvua and say afterwards, well, I had such and such in mind. We go according to the general understanding of what a certain term means. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Ahu gavra dava masik b'chavre zuzi, there was a person who was owed money by another person, also lakame de Rava, so the case came to Rava for a din Torah. He tells the loiva, swear, pay, he tells the loiva, pay up, you owe me money. The loiva says, praticha, I already paid you. So Rava says, then you'd have to swear that that you already paid him. Now, in Masech de Shavuos, it deals with at some length, this was recently in three Parakim of Rambam, that there are cases where it would have to be a Shavuot Daraisa, in particular if he's Moedu B'miktsas. If he admits only part of the sum, and then in other cases he would have to swear derabanan. Here we're going to have that he's going to take a sefer Torah, that it's called the shvuas heses. Here we're talking about he was going to take a sefer Torah, which means the Ran points out it must have been a case of moed b'miktsas, and therefore he has to swear shvuas deraisa, which involves holding a sefer Torah. Well. The guy knows he hadn't actually paid, and he's concerned about swearing. There was pretty severe consequences for swearing falsely. In fact, the Gemara, the Mishnah in Shavuos tells us that before a person takes a Shavuah in Beis Din, they give him a very sharp warning about the consequences of it. Ozel v'aisi kanya, so he went and got a stick, a walking stick. V'yoyev zuzi begaveh, he put the coins inside the hollow stick. V'ava mistimich v'ozel osi alei le-Beis Din, and then the next time he comes to Beis Din for the Shavua, he's leaning and walking on the stick. Omelahu l'malva, so then he says to the malva, nekoit hai kanya b'yodach, please hold the stick while I do the Shavua, because I have to hold the Sefer Torah. Not of Sefer Torah v'ishtaba depare koma dehavale b'yidei. They took the Sefer Torah and swore that he had given him everything that he owed him, which happened to be true because he had given him the stick, but the guy didn't know that. Ahu malva b'yodei ahu malva. Rogaz, the malva got so angry. What do you mean? You swore falsely. What do you mean? You didn't pay it back. The tavri lahu kanya. He broke the stick. The ishtapo chanu zuzi ba'ara, and all the coins spilled out on the ground. The ishtak the kushta ishtaba. So it comes out the guy actually did swear truthfully, but nevertheless this case is actually called in the Gemara in a couple of places kanya de Rava, the story with Rava involving the stick. And the result of that was that from then on, when there must be somebody in Beis Din, they tell him you're not taking the shavua on your own das. You're taking it al das based in, meaning you have to have that the meaning of your words of the shavua is not going to be the way you think they are, but the way that we based in think they are. So you're not going to be able to get away with saying I gave him the money, and really it means you gave it to him in a tricky way like that where he doesn't know of it. No, if you're going to swear you gave him the money, it has to be in a way where he would know about it.
He didn't lie.
So that's the point. Technically, he didn't lie, but nevertheless, in order to avoid that kind of problem, from then on in Beis Din, we tell the person that we're swearing you, I'll das Beis Din rather than on your own das, to avoid this kind of trickery. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Ches Shvat. The Rebbe we talked about in Asicha, the Nosi Adur is Mashiach. Now, first of all, what does the Mashiach mean? Well, you have the most simple sense, Meloshin Moshuach, that it means that he's anointed by Hashem to be the leader of the Jewish people. Now, the Rebbe also says, I won't object if people are going to understand that it means Mashiach Kipshute, Mashiach Tzidkenu, because the fact is, that is true, the Nasi Ador is the Mashiach of the generation. People are going to complain, the Rebbe says, that this kind of style of talking and this kind of these kinds of titles are more than they can bear and more than they can understand. Okay, it doesn't really matter whether they can understand it or not. We don't have time for it to be understood. This is the way it is, basically, the Rebbe is saying.
It's correct.
Okay, continuing with halacha of medicines and therapeutic things on Shabbos and all. If a person has a splinter, then he's allowed to use a needle to take it out on a needle or a pin to take it out on Shabbos. He does have to be careful, again, not to cause bleeding, because that would be an actual malacha of oisa chavura. So when, in all the simen, we've been talking about things that are also only derabanan, but here this would be an actual malacha deraisa chabura, which is making a chabura, a wound, which is a tolda of shoichet, and therefore he has to be careful not to do that.
Brings not to bite on the cuticles because they might bleed also.
No, biting on the cuticles is something else. That's a malacha of goizes. That's you have a malacha not to
what
not
mean,
to.
Though?
It's not just that. The point is that there's also a malacha, not, there's also a tolda of, you have the malacha of goizes, shearing, like shearing wool off a sheep. A tolda of it is removing things that are attached to the body, such as hair and nails. So yeah, a person bites his nails on Shabbos, then that would be an issue. There is a limited thing of that, where if a person has a hangnail, little strips of skin, for example, that come off near the nails or the nails themselves, that mostly has come off, and it's causing him tsar, then he's allowed to pull it off on Shabbos by hand. Okay. Now then, another din in this connection, when you have a person, so all this time we've been talking about a person who's basically healthy and just he's feeling some kind of ache or something. What about you have a person who's so sick that he needs to be in bed? So then, even though he is able to walk, but mostly he has to be in bed, so then, therefore, we can tell a goy to do things for him on Shabbos. He would even be allowed, in that case, to eat food that was cooked for him on Shabbos by the goy, because now we're saying that such a thing is mutter for him because he's a choyla. He would also be able to take medicines or do other kinds of therapeutic things like that. The Alter Rebbe actually holds that even such things, you'd still have to do some kind of shinui unless there's a danger to some limb of his body. As long as there's no actual malacha involved, even in Issur Dirabbanan. If there's an Issur Dirabbanan, then you can have a goy do it, because then it's an Issur Dirabbanan to tell a goy, and it's also an Issur Dirabbanan, this particular thing, and therefore it's called Shavus to Shavus, and such a thing is mutter. If there's no goy available, then yesh lahatir, then you could maybe have a yid do an isur d'rabbanan through a shinui. The Alter Rebbe would hold, actually, that even with a shinui, you could even do a malacha gemura in that case for the sake of a person who's sick like that. Okay.